Now the feast of unleavened bread, called the Passover, was approaching, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were looking for some way to get rid of Jesus, for they were afraid of the people. Then Satan entered Judas, called Iscariot, one of the 12. And Judas went to the chief priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with them how they might betray Jesus. They were delighted and agreed to give him money. He consented and watched for an opportunity to hand Jesus over to them when no crowd was present. And then we're going to jump to verse 49, which is on page 1059. 47, thanks. While he was still speaking, a crowd came up, and the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this." And he touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come with him, "Am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns."
People who deal with human beings like us sometimes tell us that when we face difficulties, we tend to react in one of two ways, fight or flight. And I came across this image on the internet, which kind of explains it, that when we face difficulties, some of us are inclined to stand our ground, defend our position, attack, dig in, persevere, whereas others of us might be more inclined to give way, retreat, discard, remove ourselves, give up, and move on. If you ever speak to people who help folk in their marriages when they're going through difficulties, they will often say that these are the two reactions that people have to difficulties in their marriage. Some might want to start fighting each other. There'll be lots of arguments pitching their position one against the other. Alternatively, some might say, "No, I'm just going to disengage from the other person, become detached, or actually remove themselves from the situation." There can be a tendency to fight or flight. Think about maybe when we've ever had to engage with the authorities, the tax man or the local council over something. Some of us don't want to ruffle feathers. We'd rather walk away from any conflict. Others will want to make a lot of noise and make a lot of the conflict. We often choose either fight or flight. This morning I want to show us another way. Not fight, not flight, but faith. Not fight, not flight, but faith. And so I've given our message this morning that title, Fight, Flight, or Faith. Come with me to this passage about Jesus and I'll show you what I mean. Let's read that second reading again in Luke 22, verses 47 through to 53. And you'll find that starting on page 1058 in the Church Bibles. While Jesus was still speaking, a crowd came up, and the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus asked him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. Jesus answered, "No more of this." And he touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come for him, "Am I leading a rebellion that you've come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns." So in this passage, we find Jesus facing the darkest, most distressing time of his life. one of his disciples has gone and done a deal with his enemies to betray him. And now he comes leading a crowd who are going to arrest Jesus. A crowd comes led by Judas, one of the 12, approaching Jesus to kiss him. So Judas has this gesture of friendship and affection, offering a kiss to Jesus, but he's actually using it as a way of marking Jesus out to the mob. This is the one you need to arrest. It's a horrible betrayal, but it's just the beginning of a whole sequence of events that will go from bad to worse. I just to kind of make that point, just look at some of the headings that we have in our church Bibles over the next couple of pages. So following this arrest, you have Peter disowning Jesus, you have the guards mocking Jesus, you have Jesus before Pilate and Herod on trial, you have the crucifixion, you have his death. Over this period of time that Jesus is now entering, his opponents will, as we might say, do their worst. We're going to read of a crowd who will call out for his crucifixion in spite of his innocence. We'll read of those who will watch his crucifixion and sneer at him as he breathes his last. But more than these kind of human events, Jesus also knows that something deeper is going on here. Get those words at the end of our reading this morning. "This is your hour," he says to his enemies, "when darkness reigns." This is your hour when darkness reigns. So here is Jesus facing the darkest, most distressing days of his life. And you can imagine weighing up his options. What am I going to do here? How am I going to respond? But notice he hasn't chosen flight. He hasn't run away. Notice how he says to his enemies at the end, "Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me." He never backed away from the controversial claims he made about himself. He hasn't done a runner, as it were, and taken himself out of the situation. And my father used to say about me, with Martin, "It's anything for a quiet life." That's not what we see here with Jesus. He's not chosen flight. But neither does he choose fight. That's clearly what the crowd were expecting when they came to arrest him. So he says, you know, "Why have you come out to me with clubs and swords, thinking I'm leading a rebellion?" They were expecting him to put up a fight. His followers, his disciples, are kind of ready to put up a fight. When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" But Jesus is not interested in a fight. In fact, he's so concerned that he doesn't come over as just another violent troublemaker that he heals the man of his right ear. One of the disciples strikes this man, cutting off his right ear. Jesus says, "No more of this." He touches the man's ear and heals him. Just note as an aside, here is the Lord Jesus who taught us to love our enemies and to do good to those who persecute us. He is no hypocrite in this situation. So here is Jesus facing these distressing time, and he doesn't choose flight, and he doesn't choose fight. That's so different to us. It's interesting, isn't it, that very often heroes in our world are those who make wonderful escapes. Jesus could have tried to fight his way out, engage in a kind of a dramatic chase, like a kind of a first century Jewish James Bond, showing his greatness through escaping. Jesus shows his greatness through surrender. Jesus shows his greatness through surrender. Why is this? Why no fight? Why no flight? Why walk into this darkness when his enemies will have their hour? Why give himself to this? Well, the answer is very simple. Jesus has a greater victory on his mind. We might say that at this point, Jesus is choosing to lose this battle in order to win a war. to lose this battle in order to win a war. Because when we look at the rest of the section headings in our Bibles, after Jesus' death and after Jesus' burial, what do we find? The resurrection. Jesus appears to his disciples. The ascension. This section is going to end with Jesus explaining to his followers that he had to suffer these things. The betrayal of Judas, the mockery, the trial, the cross, the scorn. He had to suffer these things and then enter his glory. No fight, no flight, rather faith in a victory that would end in his glory. No fight, no flight, rather faith in a victory that would end in glory. There's a saying, isn't there, that stars shine brighter when the night grows darker. Stars shine brighter when the nights grow darker. And so at this time, the uniqueness and the greatness of Jesus is seen when darkness reigns. His faith, his confidence in a greater victory that will end in his glory. Now, I think there's two simple reasons why we have these verses that talk about the circumstances Jesus faced and his reaction to those circumstances. Let's put the first one up on the board. Simply this: these verses are here to feed our faith in Jesus. To feed our faith in Jesus. When I was a boy, I became quite fascinated by a man called Harry Houdini. And many of us will have heard of his name. He was an amazing escape artist, an escapologist, as they call them. And he let people do all manner of things to him. So he would let them kind of tie him up with ropes, and somehow he managed to get out. Then he'd let them kind of tie him around with chains and have locks and padlocks and so on, and he could kind of pick those locks and he could get himself out of those chains. And I think there was even a time when he kind of was in a straitjacket inside a box, lowered into a river in America, and he's got to hold his breath and he's got to kind of get out of these locks and get out of this straitjacket and come to the surface and so on. And the more impossible the situation was put in, the more it showed his skill as an escape artist who could free himself. Jesus allowed things to happen to him that Harry Houdini would never have considered. Jesus gives himself over to arrest by his enemies. He gives himself over to an unfair trial. He gives himself over to the cross, to crucifixion, to death, to the grave. He knew exactly what was coming at this point. It's interesting, isn't it, that this morning we're going to be celebrating the Lord's Supper. These are things that help us remember the Lord Jesus. But just notice this, these things were not suggested by his disciples years after his death, saying we've got to think of some way in which we can remember Jesus. Oh, I know, let's kind of remember his death. No, these are things that were instituted by Jesus before his death. He knows as he walks into this darkness exactly what's coming. This is my body broken for you. This is my blood spilt for you. It's a reminder of his death and his real burial. What Jesus is going into here is no circus trick. It's not a kind of a Covent Garden entertainment like that Klingfilm man that wraps himself up and gets out. Jesus was letting the powers of darkness have their way with him. They were given license to do their worst. But note, he used their worst to do his best, giving his life willingly as a ransom for many, rising in victory over sin and death. Now look, we need to get this morning. Even the powers of darkness, even Satan himself in his hour, when he's allowed to do whatever he wants, ends up bringing glory to Jesus. even Satan himself, given his hour to do his worst, allowed to do whatever he wants, only ends up bringing glory to Jesus. So these verses are firstly here to feed our faith in Jesus. But there's another reason we have these verses. They're to feed our faith in Jesus so that we might follow his example. So that we might follow his example. So that when we as Christians face our dark hours, when it seems as if everything is against us, when we're aware of the darkness without and within, we don't choose the path of flight or fight. We don't retreat from the conflict, just do whatever we have to do to fit in that anything for a quiet life again. But neither do we try and fight with the weapons, the tactics and the strategies of this world. Rather, we keep going, confident in the one who kept going for us and who won for us a greater victory than any human tactics could achieve. Now, I recently read an article about a Christian believer who lived in North Korea. And she was imprisoned in a labor camp because of her faith. But even there, she was determined to meet with other Christians. And the only place they could do that was actually in the toilet blocks, as they all queued at the same time. So they obviously arranged to kind of all go to the toilets at the same time, all could stand in a queue, and then they would whisper Bible verses to each other and words of encouragement. And she also talked about the way that they would take advantage of heavy rainstorms to sing hymns out loud because nobody could hear them above the sound of the rain on the roof. Look, even in that darkness, when everything was against them, these stars, these Christian believing stars, shone brightly because of their confidence in Jesus. But I wonder about closer to home, whether we haven't been given also examples of those who have shone brightly because of their confidence in Jesus when times have become dark. And many of us here are aware that there was a man in the church some years ago called Mike Head, that's Raquel's husband, who in his 50s was diagnosed with cancer. It was ugly. It was painful to watch his pain as he deteriorated. And over that period of time, he could have said, oh, well, I'm just going to give up on my faith. I'm going to run away from trying to stand as a believer at this time. He could have tried to fight it with all those kind of normal strategies that our world has. I'll just try and forget it. I'll just try and party or find some kind of escapism or whatever. But he never chose that path. Mike kept believing faithfully to the end. And many of us say we learnt more about Jesus through Mike's death than we did through his life. But I can think of other people in the fellowship at this time who are facing darkness, facing difficulties. It might be in your family situation. It might be in your health. It might be in your relationships. And again, it would be easy for you to kind of run away. Give up on Jesus. Look at this time as a kind of a silly phase in your life, something that you've got to now grow out of. It would be easy, on the other hand, to take up the strategies of this world, to try and fight that darkness by saying, well, I'll just look on the bright side. Or I'll just accept that other people have had worse situations than me, or, well, I've had a good inning so far, or simply say, well, I just want to complete my bucket list and then that's fine, or I'll just party and kind of fight it that way with the strategies of this world. But Jesus would say to us this morning, look at me, trust me, I've won a greater victory for you. Keep going, believing in that. And as your night grows darker, your light will shine brighter. I just want us to think about that this morning. This passage is here to feed our faith in Jesus so that we might follow his example. Look, we need to get both of those things together. If we read the Bible and say it's all about following the example of Jesus, we'll simply be trying to do it in our own strength. We need to feed our faith in Jesus and what he's done for us through the darkness he faced, understanding the victory he achieved, so that we can follow the example of Jesus. Do you know, as I thought about this, in many respects, these are the two things that Grove Hill is always about. It's almost, you might say, whenever we open our Bible, it's these two things that is the reason why we open the Scriptures, is to feed our faith in Jesus so that we might follow the example of Jesus. So what is it for you this morning as you face the difficulties that you face? Some of them will be known to others. Some of them will only be known to you. And you might feel that things are against you. And you might feel that the kind of sin-sick world that we live in is just having too much impact on you. Is it fight with human strategies? Well, I'll just try and help let money solve my problems. I'll let entertainment solve my problems. I'll find escapism, whatever it might be. Is it running away? I'm not going to try and stay with this Christian faith anymore. I'll just kind of make things easy for myself and come away. Or is it faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and his great victory? Will you keep believing in that?